Well, we'll work tonight from the passage in Matthew, Matthew chapter 26. And I'll begin reading at verse 57. Matthew 26, verse 57. Those who had seized Jesus led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were gathered together. But Peter was following him at a distance as far as the courtyard of the high priest and entered in and sat down with the officers to see the outcome. Now the chief priests and the whole council kept trying to obtain false testimony against Jesus so that they might put him to death. They did not find any, even though many false witnesses came forward, but later on two came forward and said, "This man stated, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days.'" The high priest stood up and said to him, "Do you not answer? What is it that these men are testifying against you?" But Jesus kept silent. And the high priest said to him, "I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God." Jesus said to him, "You have said it yourself. Nevertheless, I tell you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his robes and said, "He has blasphemed. What further need do we have of witnesses? Behold, you have now heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" They answered, "He deserves death." Then they spat in his face and beat him with their fists, and others slapped him and said, "Prophesy to us, you Christ, who is the one who hit you?" If you're following in A.T. Robertson's Harmony of the Gospels, this is on pages 209 through 211. And let's look at the back page in your notes tonight, and you've seen this for a couple weeks now. The 22 laws of the Sanhedrin. This is in the Sanhedrin tractate of the Mishnah regarding trials. And number 1, 2, and 3 on this list, we saw 2 times ago that those 3 were all violated during Jesus' arrest in Gethsemane. Then number 4 and number 5, we saw last time that number 4 and number 5 were violated in stage 1 of the Jewish trial, the one before Annas, that we looked at last time in John 18. Everything else on this list, 6 through 22, we're going to see violated tonight in what we just read. So keep that in mind. So after stage 1 of the Jewish trial, and remember there will be 3 stages, but after stage 1, Annas sent Jesus to Caiaphas the high priest, and we saw that in John 18:24. Next time, Jesus was still bound and led to Caiaphas the high priest. So Jesus was brought from Annas' residence, which we don't know exactly where that was, but it wasn't far from Caiaphas' house. Jesus was brought from Annas' residence to Caiaphas' house, according to Luke 22, verse 54, which actually says, the high priest's house. And now we pick up here in our Matthew passage tonight. This is where the Sanhedrin had gathered for the second stage of the Jewish trials. So in Matthew 26:57, we read where the scribes and the elders were gathered together. Now, this violated law number 6 on your list. Law number 6 says Sanhedrin trials could only be conducted in the hall of judgment of the temple compound, or the Sanhedrin council chamber on the temple compound. That's where trials were supposed to be conducted, not in the high priest's house. So the fact that they were even doing it there was violating their own law. And we'll pass by quickly verse 58 here tonight and come back to it the next time. But they would have taken Jesus to the upper level of Caiaphas' house, which if you visit there today, and you can visit this place in Jerusalem, the upper level where the trial would have been is now a Catholic church sanctuary. But that upper level would have been where the trial would have taken place. And while that's going on, Peter, who had followed, is outside in the courtyard, according to verse 58. We'll come back to that next time. Now, Caiaphas, and we have met him before, but Caiaphas was the high priest from 25 through 36 A.D. So this is into the second half of Caiaphas' career as high priest. As we've seen, Caiaphas was active in leading the Sanhedrin to reject Jesus as Messiah. We won't review that tonight, but we've spoken of that several times. The Sanhedrin consisted of actually 70 members plus the high priest for a total of 71. And there was a way that was to be broken down. Out of the 71, 24 were chief priests, and they were Sadducees. And 24 were elders who were Pharisees. And 22 were scribes who were Pharisees. So out of the 70, you can see that the Pharisees had the majority. And Sadducees and Pharisees did function something like political parties function in our country today. So the Pharisees had the majority, but to counterbalance that, the high priest was a Sadducee, and the high priest acted as the high judge, and if need be, as a tiebreaker or something. So that was the way it was set up. Now, out of the 71, 23 members had to be present in order to conduct a trial. If there weren't 23 there, then it wasn't a legal trial. Out of the 23, 11 votes were sufficient for acquittal, and 13 votes were sufficient for conviction. So that's the way this was to be done. Now, out of the 71, two members were likely missing this night. Those two would have been Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea. They probably were not invited because people knew that they were pro-Jesus. Probably others were missing as well, because it's likely that only those who were known to be sure of supporting Jesus' death sentence would have even been summoned to Caiaphas' house. So if you weren't going to vote to put Jesus to death, you weren't invited to the trial. No, that's not very honest. You know that. Just a question for you to think about. Could Saul of Tarsus have been one of those Sanhedrin members present that night? And the answer is very probably. We can't say for sure, but very probably. He was a Sanhedrin member at one point, and he would have been one of the youngest, if not the youngest, at this point in time, if that was the case. The Sanhedrin began this second stage by bringing false witnesses to establish a charge. You read that in verse 59. They kept trying to obtain false witnesses to obtain false testimony against Jesus so that they might put him to death. Now, if you look at your Sanhedrin list, according to number 7, what they did was out of order, because the proper order was to have the defense go first and then the people making their accusations would go next. But they did it in the wrong order. What they did also violated number 8. Number 8 says, all may argue in favor of acquittal, but all may not argue in favor of conviction. And as we'll see, there's a reason for that. But at this point, they were all doing what? Trying to find false testimony to convict Jesus and put him to death. And there was nobody speaking for his acquittal at all. The Sanhedrin could not even find 2 witnesses who agreed. And you can see in verse 60, they did not find any, even though many false witnesses came forward. They couldn't find 2 witnesses who agreed. Now, eventually, in verse 60 and 61, you read, later on, 2 came forward and said, this man stated, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days. And that's interesting. I'd encourage you to read the passage in Mark. And in Mark 14, verse 59, it says, not even in this respect was their testimony consistent. So even those 2 who came forward were not consistent. And we can see that when we compare Matthew and Mark. In Mark, one of the witnesses quoted Jesus as saying, I will destroy this temple. And in Matthew, they quoted Jesus as saying, I am able to destroy this temple. Now, there's a difference between saying, I will destroy it, versus I am able to destroy it. One is a statement of intent. The other is a statement of capability. So they contradicted each other. But the reality of the situation was both of them were wrong. Because Jesus did not say either of those things. Jesus never said, I will destroy the temple. And Jesus never said, I am able to destroy the temple. What Jesus said, and you can look it up in John 2, 19 through 21, what Jesus said was, destroy this temple, and in 3 days, I will raise it up again. And Jesus was speaking not about the stone temple. He was speaking about his body. We're told in John chapter 2. So both of them were correct. Jesus didn't say incorrect. Jesus didn't say either of those things. Now, what does that mean? By law, Jesus should have been released because there were not witnesses who agreed in every detail. Look at number 9 on your list. There were to be 2 or 3 witnesses, and their testimony had to agree in every detail as per Deuteronomy 19:15. And if you don't have 2 witnesses that agree in every detail, what happens? The accusation gets thrown out and the prisoner is to be released. Well, they didn't do that, did they? So they've violated another of their laws. Now, by this time, and probably this whole second stage of the trial took roughly an hour and a half, certainly less than 2 hours. In other words, like in the time that you're going to be here tonight, this whole thing would have happened. Okay, so at this point, they've been trying to get these witnesses and it hasn't been working out. That's probably been going on for 35 or 40 minutes or so, maybe even a little longer. By that point, Caiaphas is frustrated. You know, we're not told his thoughts, but my guess is Caiaphas is thinking something like, these Sanhedrin guys don't know what they're doing. You know, they can't even come up with a charge. They can't even get this together. So Caiaphas, out of frustration, berated Jesus for his lack of response. Verse 62, the high priest stood up and said to him, do you not answer? What is it that these men are testifying against you? So it's like out of frustration, Caiaphas says, Jesus, don't you hear what these guys are saying? And don't you have any response? Of course, they hadn't really said anything for Jesus to respond to. But Jesus remained silent, verse 63 tells us at the beginning, which I just find so remarkable. Here's why I find it remarkable. When it says Jesus remained silent, do you realize Jesus was actively fulfilling prophetic scripture by keeping silent? You know that? Yeah, Isaiah 53, verse 7, you know, like the sheep before the shears is silent. So even when he was being led to destruction in all of this, he kept silent. And while all of this is going on, and you know, you can just imagine the kind of clamor and turmoil of this whole trial scene, but quietly, underneath it all, Jesus is still in control, isn't he? That's an amazing thing to think about. At that point, Caiaphas put Jesus under oath. Verse 63, he said, "I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God." So Jesus, are you the Messiah, the Son of God? Tell us that. And in so doing, Caiaphas violated law number 10 on the list. Law number 10 says there was to be no allowance for the accused to testify against himself. But Caiaphas was telling Jesus he had to testify. He put Jesus under oath. Notice from the statement in verse 63, Caiaphas clearly understood two things. He understood that Jesus claimed to be the Messiah. Now, you cannot have gotten this far in our study of the life of Jesus to know that's true. Jesus did claim to be the Messiah. And Caiaphas knew that. And Caiaphas also understood that Messiah is the Son of God, which is a statement of deity. Tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God. So Caiaphas understood that the Christ is the Son of God. So this, the notion, and it's actually still a notion within Judaism today, that the Messiah is not or does not have to be God. I mean, there are Jewish people who believe that. But just understand, that's not what Caiaphas believed. Caiaphas understood the Messiah had to be God. So even contemporary Jewish ideas about the lack of deity of the Messiah are in error. Now, under Jewish law, when someone is under oath, they must respond. And Jesus does. So, tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus in Mark 14:62 said, I am. And here in Matthew 26:64, he said, you have said it. Now, I think Jesus said this very straightforwardly, but you can kind of imagine it in your mind, because when we say, you said it, we kind of have, you know, somebody says something and you go, well, you said it. You almost say that with a little, you know, half smile or something. I'm not sure that that's the way Jesus was intending this, but you can picture it that way. Are you the Messiah? I am. You said it. Caiaphas, you said it yourself. Now, Jesus answers further here in verse 64 that someday they will witness him sitting at the right hand of God and coming on the clouds of heaven. And it might be easy for us to miss the impact of that. You know, you'll see me sitting at the right hand of God. What is Jesus doing? He is answering Caiaphas' question based on Psalm 110, verse 1. And if you'll recall, Psalm 110, verse 1, David says, I saw the Lord, Yahweh, say to my Lord, Adonai, you will sit at my right hand until I make all your enemies as a footstool for your feet. Talking about the Messiah. Do you remember that only on Tuesday of this week, so actually less than 3 days ago, Jesus had the discussion with the Pharisees about Psalm 110. And Jesus challenged the Pharisees and said, Messiah, whose son is he? And they, of course, said, the son of David. To which then Jesus said to them, then why did David say, the Lord, Yahweh, said to David's Lord, Adonai, sit at my right hand? Messiah is God, and Jesus is the Messiah. And that's very clearly what he's saying when he says to Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin, you'll see me sitting at the right hand of God. I'm fulfilling Psalm 110, verse 1. And what about this coming on the clouds of heaven. Well, that too is referring to a messianic passage, Daniel chapter 7, verse 13, that says, you'll see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven. And Jesus is saying that one spoken of in Daniel 7:13, Jesus is saying, that's me. I'm that one. So Jesus is very clearly, biblically, and directly saying that he is the Messiah. Now, right at this point, how does Caiaphas react? In reaction to Jesus' statement that he is Messiah God, Caiaphas violated law number 11 on your sheet by tearing his robes. Verse 65, then the high priest tore his robes. Law number 11 says the high priest was forbidden to tear his garments as per Leviticus 21:10. So it was against Jewish law for Caiaphas to tear his garments. But what did he do? He tore his garments. That was a reaction to Jesus' statement. And then Caiaphas originated a new charge, blasphemy. Blasphemy. Verse 65, behold, you have now heard the blasphemy. A new charge. And this violated law number 12 on the Sanhedrin list. By the way, on your notes, just move that down from the previous bullet to that one. Violated law number 12, which says charges could not originate with the judges. They could only investigate charges brought to them. Well, Caiaphas isn't investigating any charges, is he? Nobody's brought any. So Caiaphas had to invent one. They couldn't get Jesus on trying to destroy the temple. Couldn't find consistent witnesses. So Caiaphas comes up with a new charge, blasphemy. Now, a charge of blasphemy was only valid if the name of God, Yahweh, was pronounced by the accused. And Jesus did not do that during this stage of the trial. He had done it other times, but he didn't do it during this stage. Therefore, law number 13 on your list was violated as well. The accusation of blasphemy was only valid if the name of God itself was pronounced. Still at verse 65, Caiaphas asking, what further need do we have of witnesses wants to condemn Jesus on the basis of Jesus' own words. We don't need any witnesses. Well, gee, that's convenient because he didn't have any. Well, we don't have any. Well, we don't need any. We'll be our own witnesses. You know, Caiaphas would have gotten along very well with Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff. Yeah. Read out of the same playbook, huh? Yeah. But law number 14 says a person could not be condemned on the basis of his own words alone. So what? They just violated another law. Caiaphas called for the verdict. You see that in verse 66. He says, "What do you think?" He's calling for the verdict. And the Sanhedrin immediately and unanimously condemned Jesus as worthy of death. Just all in one little verse, verse 66. What do you think? They answered, "He deserves death." Immediately and unanimously, they state this. This violated laws 15 through 19 on your list. Law 15, the verdict could not be announced at night, only in the daytime. Well, what did they do? They pronounced the verdict at night. Law number 16, in cases of capital punishment, the trial and guilty verdict could not occur at the same time, but must be separated by at least 24 hours. Did they separate the trial and the verdict by 24 hours? They didn't even separate it by 24 minutes. All at the same time. Law number 17 says voting for the death penalty had to be done by individual count, beginning with the youngest, so the young would not be influenced by the elders. But what did they do? They pronounced the verdict by acclamation instead of by a one-by-one vote. Caiaphas said, "What do you think?" And they just all yelled out, "He deserves death." That was it. They didn't even vote one by one. That was illegal. Law number 18, a unanimous decision for guilt shows innocence, since it is impossible for 23 to 71 men to agree without plotting. Now that was Sanhedrin law. You know, you can argue whether you agree with that or not. That was their law. So they pronounced the verdict unanimously, which according to their own law showed what? Somebody was plotting. This was a conspiracy to put Jesus to death. And the minute there was a unanimous vote, it should have been thrown out of court and Jesus should have been released. He was not. Law number 19, the sentence could only be pronounced 3 days after the guilty verdict, but they pronounced the sentence at the same time as the verdict. They didn't wait 3 days. They didn't even wait 3 minutes. So, in one verse, verse 66, five laws were violated. At that point, Jesus was physically abused by them for the second time on this night. Verse 67, they spat in his face, they beat him with their fists, and others slapped him and said, "Prophesy to us, you Christ, who is the one who hit you?" Hitting, palm slapping, and spitting in the face were considered high indignities. These three high indignities were committed, and under Jewish law, they were punishable by steep fines. Hitting, where it says they beat him with their fists, hitting was a fine of 4 denarii. Remember, a denarius was a day's wage. And so to hit somebody, you were fined 4 days' wages for that. Palm slapping, the fine was 200 denarii. That is 200 days' wages. That's more than half a year of your wages that you're fined for palm slapping. And spitting in the face, the fine was 400 denarii, which is more than a year's wages for spitting in the face. They did all of these things to Jesus and more, including mocking him. Ha ha, if you're a prophet, tell us who hit you and all that. This violated law number 20 and law number 21. Law number 20, judges were to be humane and kind. Oh yeah, Caiaphas is really being kind, isn't he? And number 21, a person condemned to death was not to be scourged or beaten beforehand. Well, they just condemned him to death, and then what did they do? They beat him. They violated their law. Now, their actions throughout this whole night violated law number 22. Law number 22 says, no trials are allowed on the eve of the Sabbath or on a feast day. Well, what was this? This was Passover. which is both a Sabbath and a feast day. It's always a special Sabbath, no matter what day it falls on. And it's always a feast day. So that they were doing this on the Passover at all was a violation of their own law. But it was the fulfillment of Scripture, wasn't it? Yeah. So even this whole second stage of the Jewish trial was a complete travesty of justice. Laws 6 through 22 are all broken in about an hour and a half. It's a travesty. You know, sometimes people think they're getting an unfair trial or justice isn't being done and so forth. You know, they really ought to speak with Jesus about that. If anyone ever knew that there could not have been a more illegal trial than what Jesus experienced here. There could not have been a more unjust trial, and the intent of it was flat out murderous. Their intent was to murder Jesus. And yet, he endured this and did it with grace and dignity, fulfilling Scripture. And he did that on our behalf. So keep that in mind when we go through unfairness and indignities and so forth. Keep that in mind that we are to respond like Jesus in those times. And so, as we go to prayer tonight, let's thank the Lord for the great, great patience of Jesus and for his sovereign fulfillment of his word. God bless you as you pray tonight.